Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I am your host, Daniel Fisher, and along with me today is the magnificent T.R. Knight. How you doing, buddy? I haven't seen you in a while.
Hidey-ho, neighbor. That's all you can see me is just above the mic.
You know, I saw a cosplay of that this weekend at Conapalooza. This guy was walking around with looked like a full piece of gate that was, you know, solid, so it was fencing, and he's walking around just looking at everybody having conversations, and I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Oh man, that's going back. That's Home Improvement. That's an old show.
Oh, I know.
That's a throwback.
Well, there it is, guys. The archive dive.
Throwback TV shows. Oh my.
Nah, I mean, we hadn't had you on in a while. I mean, I know we've had some issues and stuff like that, and I'm glad.
Yes, I'm sorry I was gone. My body decided to rebel against me, and I got sick, so I'm sorry. And tonight, it's Jeff's who body is rebelling, so be praying for him. We're not going to go into details, but Jeff is a bit under the weather, and hopefully will join us for our next podcast.
Well, I was afraid it was going to be me this week, because I was sick on Monday, and, you know, I realized what it was, so I adjusted my diet a little bit, and I'm feeling a lot better, so...
Well, mine snuck up on me, because normally I can do that as well, and so it snuck up on me and hit me hard, so sorry about that. But you know what? That's not what we're here to talk about. You know what we're here to talk about?
Parcheesi.
No. Monopoly!
Ah! Oh! That's the scariest game in existence.
What? Are you afraid of Monopoly?
Yes, because you gotta, like, buy stuff, and then you rent things, and then sometimes you have to mortgage them, and then you gotta pay off your mortgage. It's too much, like, real life.
So, that's a fear of yours.
No, not really.
We might get to that later. But Speaking of scary things, I think we should do the thing that Mike kind of gets mad at us, which makes me fearful if we don't do it each time.
Well, what's that, sir?
I think it's our one thing that we have in every podcast.
Are you... the archive dive? Is that what you're talking about?
I think I'm talking about an archive dive.
Oh, nice.
Well,
I love the archive dive.
As you may know, if you are listening to this, it is October. And October means one of many things to many people, but one of the things is scary stuff. And so the archive dive, it's not a board game, but I'm going to dive into something that is a role-playing game and is scary because I'm getting ready to run it. Curse of Strahd for D&D 5e.
But you know what? I started to run that a few months back and it fell apart. But yeah. Ravenloft, as I've said many, many millions of times, is my favorite setting in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yep, you've said that, so it's interesting. So I'm running the new 5e, came out in 2016. It's actually based more on the original module than it is the campaign world. So the original module was I6, called Ravenloft, came out in 1983, which means it's for an earlier edition of D&D. And then the campaign world came out between those and grew quite a bit. But what I like about it, it's not horror, it's gothic. Yes. And that's a different concept. So it's not a splatter film. It's not about just a bunch of scares. It's this gothic concept. And if you know anything about gothic, so if you've ever read Bram Stoker's Dracula, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, that kind of literature, that's what this role-playing campaign is about. And it makes it interesting. It's like even the characters my guys made have like these dark backgrounds. And the whole idea of they're going into it is, you know, we're going to talk about this later in the podcast, but how do you set the ambiance for a scary role-playing game? And so,
oh man,
you know, it's going to be crazy. So we'll talk about that more later on because what we're focusing on, if you've not caught it yet, is it's Halloween and we're talking about fear. So the archive dive kind of got us that intro to it. I'm going to be running a scary role-playing game for a while. You've been running it and going to get back to it, you hope.
Oh, I hope so, yeah.
So as we talk about this, we're going to talk about fear and things that scare us. So Daniel, what scares you?
This is going to be weird, but it's the fear of not being accepted by others.
Well, that's a significant fear.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a paranoia in a way. Which is another RPG that I always wanted to try out. But anyway.
That's not a scary one. But no, and phobias are one of those things that's weird. Because the whole concept of phobias is they're irrational.
Yes.
Like for me, mine's kind of a specific one, but an odd one. I fear falling. Now, what that means is it's not heights. Like, if I'm up on something high but I feel safe, doesn't bother me. But I don't like being on roofs. I don't like being up on a tall ladder. But yet, if you put me in rappelling gear, I can rappel down the side of a cliff. So it's the idea, as long as I feel secure, I'm fine. But the moment you get me out near an edge, like, I don't like being in tall buildings near the glass, but I love being in a tall building leaning against the back wall and just enjoying the view.
Okay, let me ask you this question. You know that point where you're almost asleep and then you just all of a sudden feel like you're falling and you jump up real quick?
Yeah, I don't like
it. Does that happen a lot? Does that happen to you?
It did when I was a kid.
Happens to me as an adult.
I had the falling dreams all the time as a kid. Like, all the time. Now I don't. I've not had a falling dream in a long time.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Now, I mean, the fear of being accepted by others, I mean, it's not like a phobia. I mean, I wouldn't say, like, I'm not afraid of snakes. I'm not afraid of heights. I'm not afraid of spiders or bugs or anything like that. I mean, I think really outside of the other thing was death. It's really the only thing I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't be because I'm, you know, going to heaven. You know, it's like the graduation. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry.
Spiders creep me out. I don't fear them, but they creep me out. But no, seriously, I get irrational. If I get near where I think I'm going to fall, I can feel the whole tension. I'll start sweating. I'll feel very uncomfortable. It's a really weird concept.
I think, and there might be some sort of scientific evidence on this. I think it's where you're taller.
Yeah, maybe it could be.
Yeah, you're taller than I am, and I'm like 6'1" and a half.
No, you're taller than me, then I'm 6'1".
Oh, okay. I thought you seemed a little bit taller than me.
Yep, 6'1". Oh,
wow. That's weird, people. I guess I'm shrinking. But I knew a guy one time who was afraid of thunderstorms, and it was because he was so tall. He was afraid, you know, and he had a metal in his back.
He'd get hit by surgeries. Lightning.
Yeah, he was afraid he would get hit by lightning.
So, yeah. Were you like me growing up, though? Like, as much as I say, you know, fearful, like today, I don't as much. But when you were a kid, did you like reading books and watching scary movies and getting the willies scared out of you when you were a kid?
Yes. Now, I will say this. There's a genre that falls under horror that I don't consider horror. I just consider it disgusting.
Yeah.
And that's gore.
Oh, I agree.
And I don't consider gore horror at all.
Yeah. Well, and I think where I put it too is, I like scary, I like tension, but I don't like, I don't like slasher films, I don't like gory films. I saw some growing up, and I don't like them. See, for me, and I'm old enough, there were reruns, but I love classic Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're creepy, they make you uncomfortable, and every now and then you will literally jump out of your seat. In one of those episodes. Like, honestly, one of my favorite ones ever is the one with William Shatner with the things on the wing. That will always be one of my favorites. But the idea is, like, you know, when he's a kid, it's funny. Like, today as an adult, and I know a lot of people do, I don't like being scared as an adult now. I got plenty of other things in real life that are scary enough to deal with. But mortgages, I remember as a kid, I loved being scared as a kid.
Yeah.
And so I watched movies like The Birds, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and I would I love getting the jump scares when something would just come out of the closet or something would, you know, and you'd be yelling at the TV, "Don't go there!" You know?
Now, with me, though, I mean, as a kid, you know, Mom kind of sheltered me for a while and until I was old enough to rent movies on my own. And, you know, I rented stuff like Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, Jason, you know, for all the Fridays. I mean, and I do enjoy Friday the 13th. It's just because he's just that one. He's a monster to me. He can't be killed. I don't enjoy it. Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't enjoy all that other stuff. But I enjoy suspense. I really like suspense. If somebody has to figure out something and they only have a short amount of time to do it and stuff like that, to me, that's just a really good movie.
So what's some of your favorites?
Now these are classics for me, and one either because they're just a really good movie or that they, you know, it's funny in a way. So Bram Stoker's Dracula is always going to be one of my favorites. I've watched all the Draculas I could get my hands on, and that was my favorite one to ever come out. The Village, you know, that M. Night Shyamalan. I thought that was like the craziest movie, and it took me to the end of the stinking movie to figure out what was going on, even though you said you figured it out within the first 10 minutes. It made me feel dumb.
No, I just had seen so many of his movies, but I agree. His movies, especially his early ones, like I remember watching Sixth Sense. I remember watching, you know, and just, you're like, I don't, what's going on? I mean, he kept you wondering the whole time.
Now, The Haunting of Hill House, the 90s version or the early 2000s, it came out, it was such a good movie. I love that movie, and I'm excited about, you know, I need to go back and watch the original, but I want to watch the new TV show as well on Netflix, and then Saturday the 14th, and Monster Hunters, those are like some of the best movies.
Oh, ever. Now, if we get into just Halloween movies, then you get into, I like dark humor. So they're not scary, but I love Adam's Family.
Yeah,
I liked Monster Squad.
Oh, Monster! Yeah, Monster Squad. That's what I meant.
They're just corny.
Yeah, and I also like kids' movies. And this was before my kids were here, so like the original Halloween Town movies, I like. Nightmare Before Christmas, stuff like that. I mean, I love stuff like that.
Now, curiosity for you, when we talk about being scared and stuff and being as kids, I also find if I try to go back and watch some of those older ones, even ones that I haven't seen, it's you can tell we've been a lot more desensitized to fear. Because, like, I used to, like you, I love watching old monster movies. I'm a big Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney Jr., Lon Chaney, like the original Dracula, the original Frankenstein, the original Wolfman. And I remember when I was a kid, those black and white movies would scare me.
Yeah.
But once I started seeing, like you said, I've seen some of the Friday the 13th. I've seen Nightmare on Elm Street. I've seen some of the newer stuff. And it's, you get so used to the jump scare, you know, the music building you up and everything, that it's harder to get the tension of movies like The Shining, The Birds. Because those movies build up the tension. And so you feel it.
Yeah, well, The Shining still scares the crap out of me.
Well, it still scares me too, actually.
Now, there is two movies that I won't watch as an adult because they scared me so bad as a young adult. And that was The Blair Witch Project. I know, as dumb as it sounds, but... And then the other one was Stir of Echoes. Now, the reason why those scare me so much is because this was about the same time when high-end... sort of, you know, the movies just came out. You could actually get 5.1 surround sound headphones. Mm-hmm. And I just got a pair, and here I am alone in my apartment at my computer in the dark and trying to watch these movies. And, like, I hear something walk behind me, and I'm just jerking around and looking around and trying to figure out what's going on. And it's really just the surround sound in my headphones, because I never had a really good pair of headphones like that before. And like, it was just blowing my mind. And, you know, it... Those right there, I mean, I guess I could try to watch them again if my daughter wants to watch them, but they left an impression.
So I'm curious, we talk about leaving an impression. What is it about our phobias, about our love of jump scares, about these movies and shows? What is it that builds up that tension? What is it that creates that fear?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the atmosphere. It's completely 120% of it's the atmosphere of the game, like, and or the movies as well, like, you saw, I believe, what was that movie that had John Goodman in it where he was the guy running the movie theater?
I don't remember.
He put buzzers in the seats and stuff like that. When there were scary parts of the movie, he'd hit the button and people would jump up and stuff like that. I mean, it adds to the movies. Like, I can't watch a scary movie in the light because it's not scary. You have to watch it in the dark because you have to concentrate on that the entire time.
Okay, so let's kind of transition that then. Let's talk about the idea of for role playing. So we've talked about what builds it up for us. What is it, if we're trying to run a game, and I think this could even work with certain kind of board games, which we can talk about more later, but how do we create that feeling that we got growing up watching scary movies?
So, like, I do lots of different things for this. So, one of the tricks that I learned, if I want to put a lot of fear into my game like that, first of all, I don't introduce it at first. I let the whoever's playing, I let them build an emotional attachment to their character for a while. Like, we go through a few sessions, everything's going good, they're loving their character, they've been rolling well and all this other stuff, and they, you know, they're starting to really like things, and, you know, they do the voices whenever they have their character out and stuff like that. And that's when I start introducing scary stuff. And it's because I play a little bit on the fear of the fact that they're going to lose their character.
Mm-hmm. That's one way to do it. So that fear of death.
Yes. And so people, you know, they're all excited at first because, oh, man, this guy's great. I love this guy. And then I start pulling into more darker tones. You know, I tell people that, you know, there is always a chance that you're going to end up in Ravenloft in my games. So they always know that's a chance that they can end up in Ravenloft in my games. No matter what, I don't care what setting we're in, what RPG system I'm playing, Ravenloft is always an option.
That's funny. That's interesting. So threat. So there's that threat out there.
Yeah.
I think part of it for me is, like we talked about as kids, you know, when you're watching a scary movie, you always watched it in the dark. Okay. Your friend's house, you always watched it with the lights off.
Yeah.
So to me, any game you're playing, if you want to set that tone, and it fits the whole when you're having a Halloween party, you always like tone down the lights. You know, oh, yeah. you light candles, you have dimmer lights. Sometimes you might set either music or ambient sounds in the background. I think a lot of it too, there's things that just kind of get that feel, the aromas. A candle burning has an aroma to it.
Yeah.
If you have a fireplace or something, anything that makes the whole ambient area around you feel more enclosed, darker. It's more, you see less of what's around you. That whole concept of, like you hear in games, Fog of War. If you can set that idea where your players really only see what's going on at the table and they struggle to see, it all of a sudden just builds up that atmosphere. And so the emotion now goes along with it. To me, that's a big way of setting that tone.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, that helps a lot. Like, in the basement is where I normally roleplay. You know, I'm down there now. And, you know, first of all, you know, they only see in the lighted area of my basement. So there's big open areas in my basement that are dark that they can't see into really well unless they go into. The only noise they hear when I'm not talking is the heat pump. Well, that's good because it drowns out all the little things upstairs until my toddler runs across the floor and all of a sudden hear, you know, in the middle of a suspenseful moment, which kind of, you know, especially with younger kids, messes with them a little bit. And then the sounds that are coming from my computer, because I always use ambient sounds. I use Sirenscape and Tabletop Sound, that Tabletop Sound website.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had to a point where people have asked me to turn that off because it's so scary. And that's just background noise. Like, one day it was just a nighttime forest with rain, but the way I had PVC pipes under the table and I was clanking them together and making it sound like skeletons walking. And with the rain coming down, it was scary.
Oh, I like the PVC piping. That was an interesting idea. I think another thing, at least that I've done before, is if you adjust your voice, because if you take your voice down quieter, everybody has to lean in and they have to understand what you're talking about. And so if you change your voice from the normal loud and boisterous and happy to a slower, quieter, are you listening?
Well, sometimes, yeah, that's great, but also like walking around the table.
Yep.
Because if you walk around the table, you might lean into somebody and talk quieter to them, and it makes everybody wondering, what's he saying to that person? Why isn't he saying it to us? And then they get a little fear into them there, because they know something that we don't know.
Yep. Now, how do you, and this is more specific to a role-playing game than any other kind of game, how do you get into the descriptive elements? Like, you talked about banging together the PVC, but how do you verbally explain what's going on in front of them to set that tone? What kind of things do you state about the world around them and stuff? How do you, as a DM or a GM, set that mood of where their character is.
So I use descriptive words. So, like, instead of saying the night was dark, I would sit down. Like, if I'm writing something on my own, okay, it's not like something I'm reading that it's pre-generated.
Yep.
Like, say, for instance, the night's dark, then I'm like, okay, where are they going to be at? So, say they're in a forest, I would go in there and find more descriptive words of darkness, and start using those. And I would have all this typed up. Because when certain elements, I prep.
Yep.
I spend a lot of time prepping. So, I would go in and explain this. But, like, depending on the location, darkness can be different things. Like, say they're by the sea or on a ship, like I would use, instead of saying it was a dark stormy night, I was like, the night was so, it was like squid ink had sprayed through the air. It was, something like that, just showing how dark it is, and using the fact that we're on a boat or whatever, they're pirates or something, and something to that element, to make it seem more as it is.
Yep, I do the same thing. And what I would highly recommend to people, if you want inspiration for being that and to be able to say things better, read Edgar Allan Poe. Read some of Charles Dickens. Read how they describe what a street looks like, what the sound is going on. Because what happens is, like you said, you can say, well, it's a dark room. But if you say the room is so dusky that you can't see the person 3 feet away from you, you can smell the musty, mold in the air.
My favorite thing is explaining smells.
Yep.
You get in there, especially with little kids. I mean, they're like in a sewer or something. It says, you get in there and start explaining the fact that it smells like poop.
But it is amazing that, we're very visual. Most people are very visual, and you have to describe it, because if it's just the miniatures on the table in front of you, whether even a board game, like when you're playing a board game, if you can set this mood, if you can talk about what it's like in the game you're playing, it can really help set that tone. I think the other thing that's big for role playing for me, the next big thing is the pacing. When you're playing an adventurous game, a pulp game, a superhero game, the pace is very, it's just kind of charging. Where horror likes to back off and get calm for a little bit and then jump out at you really frantic and then get calm again. And it's that shifting between a calm, frantic that pumps that adrenaline up like you were talking.
Oh, yeah. It keeps it up.
When you're playing an over-the-top game, it may be action all the time, but you get this kind of euphoria, but you don't get adrenaline. And that's the difference. You're kind of getting this excitement. I'm enjoying it. We're heroic. We're doing all these things. Where you get that pacing right, if you've got a good ambience, lower lighting, good room, if you're controlling the voice and be descriptive, and you get that pacing going, even you as the storyteller start feeling the palpitations as it's going.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all about rhythm. It is that rhythm. If you can get that rhythm up and get it, quit from being, stop getting interrupted during that whole rhythm, and just keep it going and going and going. But again, DMs, this is where you have to prep. You have to read your material. Just imagine that if all your notes but your maps disappeared, could you still run that game?
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just one of the things that I stress with everybody. Like, I've got a game this Sunday with the church youth group, and I haven't started I started prepping because I just want to use some one shots, and then I started looking at some older material that I had, and I started reading it again and going, this is great, I'd love it, but it's going to take longer than an hour and a half. And so, like, it's just those little things that you've got to do. You've got to prep. If you don't prep a scary scenario, it's not going to come off right.
Well, I think you have to set the tone early as well, because if everybody comes in and the house is all bright and cheery and you have a nice, cheerful conversation, that's wonderful. But then it's hard to get everybody in the mood for that game unless you have a good way to transition back into it. So already having candles lit when people show up, already having just a little bit of the mood set, shifts the tone.
Well, Yeah, and a good thing with Ravenloft, and you might use this to your advantage when you start running it, the whole premise is to make them uncomfortable. Ravenloft is a world of uncomfort. You know, no, my words are disappearing today. It's late, and I'm tired as well. But you don't want them to get used to things. You want to be on the edge. You want them to have in the back of the mind the person they might be dealing with during the daylight is the person that's trying to kill them at night. Because they're a completely different person, like a werewolf or something like that. Even during the daytime, it's kind of like that filter. They use it a lot in The Walking Dead, that instead of, it kind of puts that gray washed out look over everything. That's what you got to imagine Ravenloft as. It's a world of struggling. And if you know how the settings are, you know, that's something where you can do, like in Rippers, from Savage Worlds, you know, it's kind of Ravenloftish, but it's London 1890s, and you're building up from there. But you know, it's going to be more like Bram Stoker's Dracula, you know, it's with the lavishness and almost a drunk feeling of the euphoria that, you know, Dracula, you know, gave off to people when he was around them and stuff like that. And so, but yet there's still a level of you know, that uncomfortableness for each person that was there.
Yeah, I think one of the best role-playing games for giving that is a game that came out actually pretty recently, is Dread RPG. It's a great game if you really want to get that feel of tension. Dread RPG uses a Jenga game as the tension. So when you're doing things in the game, you're pulling blocks off the Jenga tower. So if you ever play Jenga, Jenga is this game where you have a pile of wood blocks and you can take one off every now and then, and you're trying to keep the tower from falling. And it's a really tense game. It really gets you all into it. Well, there's a role-playing game that uses Jenga as the mechanic. And so you're supposed to set candles up around the room and have the Jenga tower in the middle. And as you're telling this tense story, when people have to do things, they have to pull blocks off the Jenga tower. And that sets the tone. And the tension builds as more gets pulled off the Jenga tower. And so it's a role-playing game built to build tension.
Oh, man, I want to try that so bad now.
I have not personally played it, but I've seen it played. And it was amazing, even as a spectator, to feel the tension that the players were feeling.
Now, I'll tell you, a game that doesn't seem that it builds tension up that I enjoy is Pandemic. It's not necessarily a scary game, but it builds a lot of tension in the same way a scary story should build tension.
And that's a good transition for it. There are a lot of board games that can build that tension. Like role-playing, we talked about, we build the tension.
Right.
We're the storyteller. Pandemic, you're right, especially Pandemic Legacy. It really does build tension up. You feel the stress of the story as it goes over and over, month by month. And so there are a lot of them. So let's do that. Let's talk about it. It's a good transition for us. What do you feel? So Pandemic is one. For me, I think one of the games that builds the tension the best, and it's based on a movie that I didn't mention earlier. I'm a big fan of Alien, the movie. And I know Alien's not necessarily a monster movie. It's not a Halloween movie, but it is a great movie about tension. And the game called Legendary Encounters Alien is a deck building game. You're thinking deck building. How could that be tense? This game, the moment you start playing it, you start feeling the tension. It builds up this whole pace of, oh, we're okay, and then there's this frantic fight to stay alive. I've played this game. I've lost track now. I'm sure I've played this game 20, 30 times. We've yet to win. We have gotten to the point, we've gotten everybody off the ship, and the last guy is on the escape ship, and we blew up the escape pod. So it's crazy. I mean, it's just, this game just carries so much tension with it that you're just like, wow. I mean, it's just, I can feel the tension in the ambiance, even in a brightly lit room, and all this from that game.
Now, let me ask you this question, though. So, what do you think, playing a game like that, what do you think the importance of that is in personality building and maybe team building? in the real world.
Well, it is an interesting thing because it's about conflict management. It's about working together as a team, even under stressful situations. And that's one reason I'm a huge co-op fan.
Yeah.
And to me, like, we're going to talk about this list of games, and almost all I think of the best scary games are actually cooperative games. Because you're having a shared terror.
Yeah.
Because to me, Legendary Encounters is an incredible game, and it's shared. You're all in it together. So it's not one of you against everybody, or, you know, two different teams. No, the tension is the game itself.
Yeah. Well, Fury Dracula, it's everybody against one.
And it still feels tense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually had that out the other day. I still didn't get to play it, though, but... Oh, I had people's like, hey, can we play that? I'm like, yeah, you got 4 hours.
Yeah. Well, and what I like about that, and Spectre Ops, which is another one like it, which is the spy one, but especially Fury of Dracula, everybody feels the tension, even the person playing Dracula.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're feeling this thing of trying to stay away and stay alive and keep doing their thing. And the hunters are fearing what he's going to do. And I love that, that even though it's one versus many, both sides feel the tension of the game. Fury of Dracula is definitely probably one of the best games, a scary game for building up tension. If you want to build up fear in the players, that game is definitely one of them.
I'm going to have to get it out. I mean, I got it almost 2 years ago, and I've yet to get to play it. Well, it's because I can't allocate enough time unless I sit down and take time from RPG night and be like, listen, guys, we're going to play this game. And so, yeah, it's one of those things. My wife doesn't like games that last.
Well, a game that I just picked up that I've been wanting for a while, and I know how it plays and I've seen it played, is Betrayal at House on the Hill.
I heard that's really good. I haven't got a chance to look at it yet.
Well, for me, first off, I usually don't like traitor games. I don't like games where there is a known traitor. But what I like about this game is you're going into a haunted house and you're investigating it. And it's the tension of the haunted house. Can you stay alive? Can you work together? It is cooperative again. But then, at a certain point in the game, the haunt kicks in and somebody becomes the traitor. And you all know it. That's what's funny, is you suddenly all know it just happened. And so there's the betrayer now. And now there's the tension. It's the one versus many, like Fear of Dracula. But what's great about it, you started out together. And yet you all know in the back of your mind, somewhere along here, I can't trust one of you, but you don't know when, you don't know who. And so this game slowly builds up this uncomfortable feel. You start out as friends, you start out working together, and you start looking at each other like, is it going to be him? Maybe it's going to be her. Wait, can I really be in the same room as this person? Maybe I should be in this room by myself. Well, wait, if I'm in a room by myself, I may get attacked. It really builds up the tension because you don't know when it's going to happen.
Right.
And then even when it happens, now there's the whole survival instinct and the franticness kicks in and you all go running like crazy to try to get out of the house. And again, it's a cooperative game that the tension is built by the game setting this pace, setting the tone. And I could see playing this game by having the lights down, having the candles burning, and it would feel like kind of a role-playing game.
Well, I mean, Dead of Winter, that, you know, I got to play that with Jeff a while back, and it was... pretty much the same thing. It's kind of like a resource management, or not a resource management, but a resource gathering. You know, you're trying to keep this one area contained while going out and gathering resources. But then again, there is a traitor amongst you. And I really don't understand how that works. So they're going to let him become a zombie when... I mean, you know, but I mean, it's another one of those games. And it's not really fun two player, but you know, when you get more than two people in there playing it, it seems like it can be really great. It's one of the ones that's on my list to pick up if I could ever get it for a reasonable cost.
Another game that I've not got to play, but I've heard a lot of good stuff about, is one called Last Friday. Last Friday is basically a version of Friday the 13th. You're basically all campers running around at the camp. And there's slowly someone trying to chase you down. And it's another one of those where it's setting that tone of you. It's a cooperative game, but then it's not a cooperative game. And I think that's, like I said, is they could be team building, but it's fun because it takes the normal Forbidden Island team building where you're all out to win together. You know, it takes the Sentinels of the Multiverse where you're all out to win the great, you know, superhero battle. And it adds that bit of tension and fear of who can you trust. And I think that's an interesting element. Now, there's a new game that has just come out that I am desperate to play at some point. Have you heard of Nyctophobia?
No, I haven't.
Nyctophobia, if I've read correctly, was created by a young lady who, and I can't remember if it was her dad or her grandpa. I'm sorry, I'll have to go back and look at that later, but you can look up Nyctophobia, Nyctophobia. It's a game that you play blindfolded. So it's got this board in front of you. You all have to wear these dark out sunglasses, these blackout glasses, and you have to use your hands and you touch the board, and it's got these little fences and other stuff that have different shapes. And you're trying to feel your way around and move your pawn out and get away before the evil person gets you.
See, that, I don't know. That's just,
It's creepy, isn't it?
Yeah, that actually is creepy. I mean, just to sit there around the table wearing blackout sunglasses, it's just, I don't know if I could do that.
And it fascinates me. And I want to experience, like, I don't know if it's a game I'll enjoy, but it's the idea that a game was built from the perspective of how a blind person experiences life. But they're used to it. We're not used to being unable to see. And so it adds this emotional element that we don't get it. And so that fear kicks in because you're like, I can't trust what I'm doing. I have to do everything from my hands. I'm not used to using my hands for making decisions. And so that fascinates me. And I like it because it's not about horror. It's not about slashing. It's about tension and fear and the unknown.
I don't know. I'll give it a try if we can get it to the table.
Yeah. So that's one I'm going to try to look for because I'm very curious about it. And now there's a whole bunch of the horror games out there too. You got your Eldritch Horror, Elder Sign, Mansions of Madness, a lot of Cthulhu games out there. There's a lot of what I'd call monster games, but I don't feel that all the monster games do as good a job of building up tension as being more of a monster of the week hunter kind of game.
Yeah, I think that's it, especially with Cthulhu. I mean, like, Cthulhu is like a big squishy squid baby. And, I mean, we all know the story of Cthulhu and stuff like that. That, to me, doesn't really do a lot for me. You know, I've played Eldritch Horror. There is one I want, and that's Kingsport. It's only because I live in a town called Kingsport.
Yeah, I mean, I've played Arkham, but even when playing Arkham, I never felt afraid during Arkham. I just felt frustrated that there were things that I had to defeat.
Yeah.
Where when I play the games that we've listed, I feel the tension in Fury of Dracula. I feel the tension when playing Legendary Encounters. Dead of Winter, you feel that survival and the fear of the unknown and what's coming next.
Yeah, I mean, and you listed a game here that I wouldn't really consider a horror game, but like more of an uncomfortable game, and that's Gloom.
Yeah, I put a couple in here because they're kind of funny. Gloom and One Night Ultimate Werewolf often show up in games that are about fear and Halloween.
Well, Gloom, first of all, I love the artwork on Gloom. Mm-hmm. I have Gloom. My daughter bought it for me for my birthday like 2 years ago. And we've been playing it like a lot longer than that because a buddy of mine had a copy of it. And it's really cool. You start out with these four cards that are family members, your family members. And I can't remember the name of the artist that they stylized those after, but it always reminded me of PBS Mysteries. Yeah. And so what you're doing is you're trying to make this person very unhappy. And so they get negative points. And then at the end, you kill them. While your opponents are trying to make your people happy and then kill them so you have positive points.
Yep.
And so the key is killing them before your opponent kills them with, more positive than negative points.
Yeah.
And so, like, my wife, she won't play that game. She finds it very disturbing that I'm wanting to kill family members.
Well, and that's why I bring it up, because I want to bring those games up, because what they are is, they're often listed as these great, scary games, but they're not as much as they're disturbing.
Yes.
And One Night Ultimate Werewolf is the, can I trust anyone? And there's a difference between fear and distrust. And there's a difference between fear and disturbed. Yes. And I think that's the thing, is I wanted to bring those up, because they're often listed as these great Halloween games. And they're great, scary games. But Gloom, I end up laughing. Now, that's partly because I have a dark sense of humor. So I love the Addams Family. I love the old show called The Munsters. I grew up watching Scooby-Doo. And so to me, gloom is kind of corny as you keep trying to make these people really dark and depressed, and then you turn around and make them happy. And that's the joy of, can you make them happier before they die? And that's funny, and it's dark. And then werewolf is the more, like most of those social games, it's about trust and distrust.
I've never really had a good game of werewolf, though.
Well, and I look at it as, I never feel afraid playing werewolf or One Night Ultimate Vampire. None of those ever build up a tension in me other than the, do I trust the people around me? And even though Fury of Dracula and Betrayal at House on the Hill and Dead of Winter have this trust thing, the game builds up tension before the trust issue is part of it. The trust gets added on top of the tension.
I just feel people cheat at that game. It's just... It's because I always play it with a bunch of kids, and there's always a cheater in there.
But I think this is, you know, a good thing where we can kind of transition a little bit. Fear is that interesting thing. Fear is an actual emotion. Fear is something, whether it's irrational as a phobia, whether it's I'm afraid of what's to come, whether it's I'm afraid of a decision I have to make. And it's different. Fear as an emotion is different than distrust. Fear as an emotion is different than dark humor. It's, fear is different than anger. Fear is different than, and anyways, fear is different than being scared.
Well, yeah, my wife likes to, because I do sometimes get afraid of certain issues and stuff, and my wife always tries to point out to me that, you know, being afraid is a sin because it's the absence of faith in God.
And you know what? And there's some truth to that, and we'll talk about that. But that difference is, scared to me is something that happens instantly. You know, I got scared real quick. I was scared of a sound. I was scared because someone come up and yelled "boo" behind me, or a car backfired when I wasn't ready for it. You get scared for a moment. Fear is an emotion that's deep. It's visceral, and it is. Sometimes you fear the unknown. You'll fear life. You know, that's where anxiety often comes from, is fear. I mean, fear is one of these emotions. We talk about growing up as kids and we like to be scared, but we don't really like to be afraid. And there's a difference. We want to be loved by our parents. We want to be loved by our family. We want to know we're secure. We don't mind getting scared for a short period of time. We don't mind playing a game that builds on this tension and makes us scared for a moment, or makes us feel that light bit of fear, but it's not real fear. It's not like you're saying, why are you afraid of that? Don't you trust, you know, the decision? Why are you afraid of that? Aren't you trusting in God? And you know what? Fear is this kind of emotion that can get beyond that. I mean, we do have to pray. We have to do stuff because fear is so deeply ingrained in us. There's that fight or flight mentality you hear about in psychology.
Yeah, and you get caught up in it too. It builds upon itself so badly. I mean, you know, you try your best to calm yourself down, and sometimes you realize that it's an irrational fear, but, you know, it's hard to fight against it sometimes.
Yeah, I talked about it earlier. I know I have a fear of falling. It's to the point I struggle going on a ladder that's too tall. Now, I can get on a ladder and change my light bulbs, but to get on a ladder to get up onto my roof, I have to think about it a bit. I have to calm myself down. I have to do everything I can to make myself feel secure, like have somebody hold the ladder, because I can't help it. Even though I know my ladder is safe, I'm wearing the right safety equipment, I know how to do it properly, this thing will get to me. And then the problem is, if you let the fear get to you, you'll actually start struggling, because then the fear will start taking over your ability to think clearly. The fear will build up, like you talked about, adrenaline will build up, other different kind of juices will build up in your body, and you'll start having that fight or flight mentality. You'll have that, I just need to get out of the situation. I don't want to deal with this.
So when you're dealing with fear that's irrational, what do you do about it?
Well, the best thing you can do is pray.
Yeah.
And that's what we talked about.
That's usually the first thing I do, is fall down on my knees. You know, and it's over. I have a fear that something's going to happen to my children. You know, if one of my kids is sick, it's the first thing I do is hit the floor. You know, if that doesn't calm my nerves, I just start reading the word.
Yep. And there's some good scriptures. And the one I want to start with for us tonight is Psalm 56, 3 to 4. This is from the English Standard Version. When I am afraid, I put my trust in you, in God whose word I praise. In God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can flesh do to me? And I love that last line, that what can flesh do to me? Because I think that's our problem. Our body is afraid. Our mind is afraid. And that's our flesh. And we've got to basically give that to God. And it's not easy. And you're in that moment and you're afraid of something. You try to figure out, how can I fix this? So, you know, you're afraid of the spider. I'm going to kill the spider. Right. You know, I'm afraid of going up there. I'm just not going to do it. I'm afraid of the job interview. I'm not going to go. And it's so hard to realize I need to trust God. And that's not just some magic thing. You know, you may pray and you may still have your fear. It takes a while to get through that. But you've got to slowly gain that trust that God is with you. Now, he helps you to have other people with you. You know, have a friend go with you to the interview. Have a friend help you with the work you're doing. Just because you've prayed doesn't mean you're not supposed to use the help that God puts with you.
To me, you know, part of the help for me is my wife. She, I'll tell you that I quickly learned as when I got married that she's kind of a rock for me. Because when I'm screwing up and I'm not going to God properly, she always is there to remind me, listen, you know what to do. Pray about it. Spend time with the Lord and he'll help you out. He'll show you what to do. And she reminds me of all the things that God's done for us. And I'm kind of like the children of, you know, Israel in the book of Judges. You know, she's there. She's my judge. You need to listen to God. You need to pray to God. And she likes to remind me of this things like that.
So. Well, and for those of us who grew up in the church, or even if you did it, you've probably heard the 23rd Psalm at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And you always hear that. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And it keeps going from there. But that's one of those, even if you don't know what to pray, if you can remember that in your head, and that's one of those psalms that's easy to memorize, you've heard it over and over, you can say that scripture as a prayer. And it's, I've done that before. I've had times when I've been afraid in life. Like you talked about, you know, when I was still single, staying in my own apartment, I've had an evening where I really felt Satan. I really felt something was wrong. You know, I just didn't feel right. And quoting scripture and praying to God gave me some peace. But then I did. I reached out and called my pastor. I reached out and called my fiance at the time. And it's interesting that hearing that other person's voice and having them pray with you is another way to help through fear, is to have another voice with you in prayer.
That's great. Yeah, it's. I mean, just that person there. And you've got to build people like that up in your life too. And you can't be you have to be positive on that one too. I mean, you attract certain people by your attitudes and things like that. And it's always important to have those people you can go to no matter what.
Well, especially because, again, we talked about, you know, you don't know when fear is going to hit you. You don't know if it's going to be irrational, if it's going to surprise you, if it's going to build up for a while. You have to have those friends that you can call no matter what time of night. Like you, I'm married. My spouse is here whenever I need. If I have to, I can wake her up. I can call her from work. I can call her before I make a decision that just is feeling wrong to me. You know, you start getting that gut feeling that something's wrong. I hate that. I hate that feeling when you start getting a little scared and you get the jitters in your stomach and you're like, and you're thinking, you know, that's okay when I'm watching a movie and I'm eating popcorn. Yeah. But when that starts happening in real life and you start getting that and the hackles, you know, the hair on the back of your neck starts raising, yeah. You're going, and you know what? If you can pray at that time, great. Or if you can't because you're driving or something, being able to ask the person beside you to pray, you know, or using your Bluetooth on your phone, or, you know, they're just, or pulling over if you have to, or if you're at work, going to the bathroom, you know, getting that time away. But you never know when it's going to happen, and having people you trust, and trusting in God is one, but trusting in godly people is the other option. Like you said, it's having those other people, because fear is one of those things we talk about that I love to be scared, and I've got friends that way. Oh, I like doing roller coasters. I like watching scary movies. I love having, you know, all the time being scared. But if you actually talk to them to find out, they don't like being afraid. And that's the difference. And I think God is there to help us from being afraid. He doesn't say we won't always be scared in life, but he's there to keep us from being afraid.
Right.
So, you know, it's, to me, that's a great way to look at the Halloween holiday. You know, Halloween, people have different opinions of it from a religious area, but the monster movies are out now. Different religions look at this in different ways. This is a, it can be a dark holiday for a lot of people, but all the movies, everybody likes to be, you know, some people like to be scared and everything. But one of the things, looking at October, looking at this time period, fear is a topic that comes up during October, whether you do it on purpose or if it happens by accident.
Now you got me thinking around that my kids are going to scare me because they have a tendency to walk down the stairs while we're recording, by the way.
You're going to get a big scare attack.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Daniel? This has been fun to talk about.
Oh, yeah. It has been.
You know, to talk about scary things while the lights are all on around me.
Yes.
It's nice and bright. I can see it's nice and bright where you are. This is the way to talk about fear. I'm glad we didn't try to set the mood for the podcast so suddenly we're both tense here at the end.
Well, yeah. And then when I get off here and you're gone and I'm sitting here for a minute and it's quiet, my headphones are on and conversation's not going anywhere. And then all of a sudden I hear a kid drop something upstairs. You know, I'm going to jump like a foot.
It's probably very true.
Yes.
Well, we will continue to pray for our absent friends.
Yes.
And we want you all to have a good October. If you find games that you enjoy, enjoy your Halloween. If you celebrate Halloween, if you don't celebrate Halloween, I respect that as much. But I want you all to know this, that God is the game master. And no matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.